Hello and welcome to the Money Marketing Podcast. I'm joined today by the team and by me. I mean, Kimberly Dondo, Digital Content Manager, and I'm going to let the rest of the team introduce themselves. So take it away, Mike.
Mike, Acting Editor.
Maria, Features Editor.
Amanda, Feature Writer.
Rosemary, Reporter.
JB, Senior Reporter.
And Lois, Chief Reporter.
Hello, everyone. We are officially in 2023. We haven't recorded yet as a team in this whole year. How's 2023 been treating you so far?
Well, not meaning to bring the tone down, but I was ill for the first 2 weeks of it, so it was a very slow start.
I feel like you are sharing the same experience as much of the population. Everyone seemed to be ill with something.
Yeah, it seems so.
What about everyone else?
Eventful.
Eventful already? Eventful. January was eventful?
Eventful, yeah.
Yeah. Everyone else had like a nice start to the year though?
Yeah, that's fine. Not so bad. Just the strikes, I think. Kind of like disrupting, you know, plans and all the stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine some of you guys have kids and having the kids, kiddos at home.
Exactly.
Educating them yourselves. Wow, it's a lot. But also you guys did cover quite a bit in January as well, so I want to get to know a lot more about that. So shall we start with Amanda? What stood out for you in January?
I'm on a team that you curveball. Start with me.
I know. I love to do it because you're just so unsuspecting.
Great. Okay, well, I think the most interesting story that I worked on in January was the one that Maria gave me. So thank you, Maria. I really enjoyed writing it up. This was the one about how new advisors find a client base. Because it's one of those things, isn't it? You start off and like, who actually teaches you this stuff? You know, Maria and I were talking about this before I actually wrote it up. And, you know, one of Maria's contributors was saying, you know, how do I even sort of start? Where do we pick this stuff up from? So I thought I'd kind of look at this and investigate further. The reason it was interesting is because it just showed me you can sort of start anywhere, really. A lot of the people I spoke to were saying it's just about speaking to people. You know, it's the guy that, you know, comes to mend your garden fence. It's the mum at the school that you see on a regular basis. But I think for a lot of young advisors, that can be really intimidating just to speak to people. But I think that it doesn't have to be a hard sell. You know, it doesn't have to be like, I'm your local financial advisor, come to me whenever you've got a problem. It's not like that. It's just about chatting about what you do. Oh, I'm setting up my own business. I'm kind of finding it a bit difficult. You know, can I have a chat with you to make sure I'm on the right track when I'm approaching clients or something like that? It doesn't have to be like, please be my client, like, you know, grab you quickly before you disappear. So I found that really interesting. And the other thing as well that I didn't think about is the first thing is sort of deciding who you want to be as your client. Because, you know, if you ask me, and I was sort of starting out advice, because I'd say like, you know, or anyone that wants to work with me. But, you know, speaking to people that have been there, that's not enough. You've got to be a bit more, what's the word, selective in who you, you know, be honest. Who do you want to work with? Who don't you want to work with? And then sort of, you know, build it from there. Because the reality is you can't sort of have this scattergun approach where, you know, everyone is a potential client, every single person you meet, and just pounce on them. It's not kind of the way it seems to work. So I found that really interesting anyway. So
I find that idea interesting. I think I remember having a conversation with Emmanuel and he was talking about how he first started, and he said that he'd always have to wake up early at the same time as, like, you know, the bin men are collecting all the bins. And he would see this one particular bin man all the time, and they ended up talking to each other because he was like, why do you wake up so early? What is your job? And then Emmanuel told him what he does, and then he was like, oh, actually, I've been sitting on like however much money, like he had a lot of money that he just like had in savings. And from there, that's a client that he ended up acquiring just from, you know, that interaction that they had, which I think is super interesting. But I also kind of had another question. Either you or Maria can answer it. How do you guys, when you're thinking of these features? How did these ideas come to you? Like with this one in particular, Maria, how did it come to you?
Well, actually, it didn't really come to me. It was from one of our aspiring advisors, and he had written it. We have aspiring advisors' diary pieces. Mm-hmm. And he'd written, and I have to remind myself exactly what context, but he was saying it's just something that they don't really get taught when you're on the training journey. You know, you can learn all the theory and all of that, but unless you're put into a firm and given a client bank, a lot of the firms, even if you are put into a firm, you have to build up your own client bank. So yeah, it's just one side of it that I just thought was interesting because it hadn't really been covered. But yeah, it's a huge challenge. It's a huge challenge. It's really daunting, isn't it? You can't really teach that side of things, you know?
No. I think, yeah, it's one of those things where they can tell you, I guess, in theory, but it seems like it's varied in terms of how people actually acquire their clients. So maybe there isn't like a clear-cut approach which you can take, but it's definitely an interesting topic for sure.
And I'm better to follow up on something like that than Amanda, to be honest. Anyone's got any questions, Amanda will sniff it all out for you.
Well, now, yeah, definitely. What about you, Momodou? What stood out for you in January?
I think for me, that would be the acquisition story. I mean, yeah, there was like a big acquisition story. I mean, with Nicholas buying Curtis Banks.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and you know, that was kind of like, big in the sense that Nicholas is trying to kind of like take over the SIP, sector, you know. So yeah, I think that was huge. And the purchase was kind of like a multi-million, you know, pounds cash buyout, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Curtis Banks, you know, provide. But it's a provider. And because of the nature of the deal, you know, I mean, concerns were raised whether this would be good for the sector, you know?
Yeah. And how is this deal different from other acquisitions that seem to happen all the time?
Well, for Nucleus, I mean, it's a very big platform company, yeah? So.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this fear of kind of like a monopoly of the platform space. Because Nucleus and other, platform firms, depend on FNZ, for their, for their tech. For their tech. So yeah, there was concern, you know, because Curtis Banks own Dunstan Thomas, and Dunstan Thomas was a very small tech firm.
Mm.
And the innovation, you know, tends to come from those small, tech firms, you know. So yeah, so there was a concern that's kind of like these big giants, you know, but these big monoliths, you know, like FNZ are trying to kind of like push out, you know, all the small, you know, tech.
Yeah. And is there anything in place that would stop that from happening?
I think that's very hard. I mean, I contacted the Competition and Markets Authority, to find out whether they can comment on the deal, but they said they have no comments, you know. With regards to this issue of monopoly and kind of like taking over.
I was just going to say, just on the CMA, I think they're more interested if two really huge companies emerging, because I just I remember when it happened with FNZ buying GBST, because they're both two quite big platform technology companies. If they came together and FNZ owned GBST, that would almost completely monopolize the space, whereas I think because it's Nucleus that's the big one, and then I don't think Curtis Banks is as, or its platform company isn't as big, so I don't think CMA would be as concerned with it. But that's just my take. I haven't spoken to the CMA, but yeah, it's just.
I think that's a bit short-sighted if that's the way they view it, because if you buy up all the small firms, then there's nothing left but the bigger ones, but I don't know.
Okay, yeah.
Very true.
So, that was the issue. I put it to FNZ, but it declined, to comment. I mean, they said it's all speculation. And as far as they're concerned, there's no monopoly, so.
Yeah, of course it's... I'm getting all sarky. Of course it's it. But we'll move on, and probably you'll pick up on it at some point during this year. So Lois, what about you? What stood out for you in January?
In the print issue, I wrote the cover feature.
Yay.
On greenwashing. So the FCA put out a consultation late last year, which I think actually closed end of January. Mm-hmm. And I think I would just need to check that. But yeah, so it was all about labels for sustainability. If you want to label your fund or group of funds sustainable, or your investment sustainable, then the FCA is proposing these specific categories with specific names, because one of the issues in the past, and what's potentially made it quite easy for funds and asset managers and also companies to greenwash, is that there's so many different terms, ESG, ethical, impact, all these different firms, and no sort of set definition for what they all are. So you can mm-hmm. kind of use some of them interchangeably, some of them are used in place of another. So the FCA just wanted to sort of define or put into different categories different types of sustainability terms that mm-hmm. companies can use, or like labels that companies can use if they want to label their fund as sustainable. So that was quite interesting. One of the things that I thought was particularly interesting while researching for it was someone I spoke to said that actually there's a lot of different definitions for the word greenwashing as well. There's no sort of set terminology for exactly what greenwashing is. So even that in itself is an issue. If you're talking about greenwashing, what are you actually talking about? So yeah, that was quite interesting. But yes, it was a big piece about ESG, which some people will hate, but I quite liked it because I introed it talking about this road trip that I went on across the USA.
Yes,
I did fly there. I know that's not sustainable, but and I drove across the USA, which is also not sustainable. But I was just talking about when I was in Miami, I arrived mm-hmm. there just after Hurricane Irma had hit. So that mm-hmm. was obviously really extreme. I saw the destruction and devastation that had caused. And then when I got across to California, it was when the wildfires were going on. So that was because of, obviously, California suffers massively from drought. But it was just an interesting sort of seeing two of the extremes that climate change can cause. Mm-hmm. So I thought that would make a good intro. Also, it allowed me to talk about my road trip across the US and again now. So.
And it makes for like an interesting read when you weave in your own stories, I think.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful intro. I feel like
it was a terrific intro. Yeah.
It was so lovely. It really took me somewhere.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I wanted to be somewhere else as well when I was reading it.
I want to be a travel writer.
Were you trying to? No, Lois, you're not. You're stuck here forever. Do that on the side, though. You can do that on the side for sure. Exactly.
Sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say, no, it was really great to read. I enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you. Yeah, it was an interesting one to write. Lots to say. So we'll see what comes out of that consultation, what responses come out. That'll be interesting to see. And the other thing I was just going to say, because mm-hmm. I don't want to go into too much detail, because I imagine JB will want to talk about it because he's been covering it more. But that was that just before we broke up for the Christmas break, the Chartered Insurance Institute said that they were putting putting three board members into the PFS. Mm. So there was all this uproar about, the CII is trying to take over the PFS. And they sort of, the CII sort of announced this just a few days before everyone broke up for Christmas. I can't remember the exact date. I think it was about the 21st or something. maybe thinking that it might not get noticed, but all us journalists who are still working and had no other news all leapt on it. So if that was the case, which I'm sure it wasn't, it didn't work.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't want to say too much detail about that because JB has gone into a lot more. But that was an interesting thing to follow just before Christmas.
And it's still ongoing. And
it is. Yeah.
So JB, what are your thoughts on this as you've been covering it?
On the CIPFS civil war, let's say.
Yeah. Can I just say, when you guys keep talking about it like that, my comic book nerd brain just sees like CII on one side and PFS on the other side, but it's like Iron Man and Captain America, but over their faces you have their logos of like the PFS and CII. So you just have to decide who's the Iron Man in this situation and who's the Captain America in this situation.
It sounds like you've got the cover image nailed.
Yes. I wanted to pitch it the other day, but I
don't. Yeah, but that's not going to happen. That's not what I want.
Oh.
And also, it's too far in the future to talk about yet.
Yeah.
For this podcast.
Yeah. Anyway, JB, the current civil war, what has been happening?
Well, first of all, I want to say that this whole situation is a bit confusing because it's changing almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's hard to see where it's going. From my understanding, the main worry is that, first of all, there are a lot of suspicions around the real intention of the CII because I think Law has highlighted it, the point of appointing three institute directors to the PFS board is to effectively take control of the PFS board. That's the explicit purpose. As I said, we don't really know why the CII is doing it. I think they talked about governance failures or something. Sorry, so that's probably not the exact wording, but you get the gist of it. And I suppose that's a critic that's often made is, you know, the CII is primarily a professional body for the insurance sector, which is different from the advice sector. So I guess some advisors are not really happy to have, let's say, insurance specialists looking after their professional body.
Mm. Yeah.
So I guess it's twofold.
And are you having fun watching it happen?
Kind of.
It's worth, can I just say, because it was like a Christmas coup.
Mm-hmm.
They called it a Christmas coup, and it literally was like the week before Christmas.
Yeah.
Like the CII literally parachuting in three of their sort of directors onto the PFS board to try and take it over. And when I heard kind of Christmas coup, I usually think, oh, that's a bit hyperbole, but it like literally was like they did it at the moment when people were on holiday or about to go on holiday.
If I may add something.
Yeah.
I don't like using the word Christmas coup because it's kind of implied we're taking a side.
Are we?
That's how I...
Well, yeah, because like the CII would be the bad guys, the ones coming in with all the guns and the tanks and whatnot, doing the coup.
We're not saying we're calling it a Christmas coup. People were referring to it as a Christmas coup.
From the PFS were referring to it. That's a good point. Yeah.
So I guess that's why JB wants to call it a civil war, because you're just like, I don't know which side is the right one. I guess the one that wins.
Yeah. I mean, technically we're here to report, not to pick side.
Okay. Wow.
That's
your journalism lesson for the day, everybody.
Yeah. Unbiased. I have never known how to do that. So what about you, Mike? What did you cover in January, or what stood out for you in January?
I did this Money Marketing Meets interview with Maxime Carmenac. And she's sort of a daughter of this influential French financier, Edouard Carmenac. And it was just about her living in the UK, her views on ESG, women in finance. And it was just a kind of really interesting interview because I did it just after a couple of days after the Queen's state funeral.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all boarded up. And then I just kind of made a connection a bit between her and sort of Maxime Carmenac and Queen Elizabeth. And it was just interesting. And she was a very impressive lady, I have to say. She's done a lot. And she was a keen marathon runner. And she really helped me kind of actually learn a bit about ESG investing and the different approaches that you have, which was quite interesting for me because I'm not a kind of expert on the subject like Lois is. So that was kind of quite just sort of stimulating for me to learn. So that was
I read a couple of bits from that, and I found it interesting that even though she was like kind of stepping into the family business, she didn't exactly like, she wasn't like a nepo baby in that way kind of thing.
No, it was actually really interesting about the thing that I found most interesting was her relationship with her dad, because her dad was very, very high powered.
Yeah.
She, I guess, maybe grew up a little bit in her father's shadow initially. And she had to carve her own way, and she actually didn't get into finance through her dad. Funnily enough, she got into it later on, and she was just very competitive and loved to win. And that kind of, and she sort of discovered that she could sort of satisfy that in finance. And so that was kind of quite interesting.
I think she's quite inspirational. Okay, great. The February issue will be dropping very soon. And once again, Leon hit the ball out of the park with the cover. I don't know how he does it. He just has this insane vision, and it just comes through, and it's so great. But who wrote the cover for the Feb issue?
JB did, and we've already spoken about the topic. Oh no, it's a different one. Sorry.
Yeah, it is. This is British Steel. Going back to the British Steel, you love it so much, don't you, JB?
It's a very complicated topic.
Yeah, I can imagine, and it feels like it gets more and more complicated.
I mean, I wouldn't want to be in the shoes of the regulator or the law firm involved.
Mm. Do you see it coming to an end at some point?
I guess that's a question. That's a $1 million question, right?
Yeah, I don't know. So what can you give us some insight into what you might have covered for the cover story?
So the FCA published its final rules. I don't remember exactly when it was, whether it was
last July or
December.
November.
November. And the final rules confirmed that the redress scheme would go ahead. But since then, you had a lot of, you had different legal challenges. So, for example, you have the British Steel Advisor Group, which is a group made of advice firms that advise steel workers to transfer from the DB scheme to the DC scheme. Let's say, filed an application at the upper tribunal to review the redress scheme. And then you also had let's say another advice firm, which is, let's say, I don't know how to word it. Let's say that has been representing the steel worker since the beginning of the scandal, who are also challenging the redress scheme because it's not delivering enough.
Okay. So, are there any exciting points that we can look forward to reading?
Well, I guess it's a good summary of all the recent evolution in this case, and I guess it's far to be over. So it's a good way to get to stay updated and be prepared for whatever
what's might to come. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, great. What about you, Maria? What stood out for you in the Feb issue? What is there to look forward to?
Amanda, I'm sure you can talk about it a little bit more, but Amanda's done a great piece on how to retain staff without pay rises, which I just thought had a really good angle you know, with inflation at the moment, obviously pay rises aren't going to be anywhere near that. So what companies can do to hold on to their staff, and there's some really good ideas in there. I just said to Amanda yesterday, I just love the range of people that she speaks to. Yeah, people you wouldn't think relate to advice, but then in some way they do. So it's just a really good range of ideas. And we've got some great columnists as usual. Robin Powell, I love his writing, and he really speaks for lots of advisors' frustrations on the FCA in this one. Paul Lewis as well, I love his insight and analysis, and he's done a piece on FCA fines. So yeah, lots to look forward to.
Yeah, I always enjoy the feedback from the Paul Lewis ones. He does not mind getting under the skin of some advisors.
Yeah, I'm so pleased that he's on board with us. He's great.
Yeah. So Amanda, do you want to go more into, just give us a little bit more of a preview on that stuff, on retaining staff?
Yeah, following on from what Maria said, I've spoken to some recruitment specialists, and they were really interested in the fact that they gave me some feedback that I didn't even think about. You know, stuff like people are going to actually get pay rises, which I wasn't really expecting. But then you hear so many conflicting things. So in that piece, I do try and sort of summarise everything, you know, the conflicting information that you do hear and how opinions do differ. But yeah, just some interesting stuff in there. You know, there's sort of flexibility, working from home, whether that has any bearing on retaining staff as opposed to do we all just want the money? But speaking to people, it's not just about the money. It's about lots of other things kind of feeding into that. So read the feature to find out what those are. That's what I'm going to say on that.
Yeah.
But can I also mention a couple of other things that I want to flag up as well?
Yeah, of course.
A thing that occurred to me, I'm looking at the In Focus piece this time is diversity and inclusion. I'm looking at ethnic diversity again. But what kind of occurred to me this time around was why it's not getting as much attention as gender diversity. And again, read the feature to find out why. I don't want to spoil it, but to me, that was a really, you know, fascinating side of things. You know, why are some types of diversity taken up by firms more than others? You know, do find out the reasons why in the feature. The other one I want to flag up as well, because I've had can I say this? Kevin Cobb sent me an email about this morning about my name checking of Paul Weller and the jam in this piece, so I just wanted to mention that. I've written about protection and whether, you know, young people can energize it in terms of young advisors, because I think, Mike, you mentioned recently the fact that a lot of new advisors are cutting their teeth on protection, so you know, sort of to include that as well. You know, whether they're coming out with new ideas, new ways of selling protection, do they even see it as selling? According to one contact in the piece, you know, that they're seeing it more as a mission, if you like, you know, a vocation, that's the word that was used, as opposed to, oh, let's just, you know, it's a selling job. So that was kind of, you know, a different spin on things as well.
Yeah, I think, that you have to change the perception of it, just instead of seeing it as something you need to sell, see it as something that people should have. It's a necessity. It's not something that you want to be like, oh damn, I should have got that before this terrible thing happened in my life or something like that. That's how I've always kind of seen it now. And Momodou, what about you? Is there anything to look forward to in the Feb issue?
Yes, there's a comment piece I wrote on the proposed pension reforms.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for the NHS, you know, so I mean, I think that's something, I mean, very topical.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, given all the strikes, I mean,
yeah,
I mean, that's been, I mean, happening and kind of going on. And yeah, and without showing, I mean, my political bias, you know, I mean, I just said that, I mean, the government should do more, I mean, to help our heroes, you know, because.
Yeah.
These were the people when the pandemic hits, you know, we all step out and clap for them and show, you know. But then, yeah, I mean, they've been failed, you know, in terms of, I mean, their pay, in terms of their support, in terms of their hours, in terms of their pension. So I think the piece, I mean, focus on it.
The clapping was cute the one day, but it was like, exactly. Now I need something equitable. Like, I need something to actually show your appreciation.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. That's my argument, you know. I mean, the public is, I mean, it's appreciated. I mean, the government, you know, when it comes to the governments. I mean, I think because of this ideological, I mean, thing, I mean, we're calling government. You know? So, but they should kind of like step in and be the doctors. I mean, it's worse for you as a doctor or nurse. I mean, you're working and you're thinking of your pension pay, you know, and other stuff, you know. And, you know, so I think, yeah, so the piece, I mean, focus on that.
Yeah. That sounds really interesting. It's something that I'm interested in for sure. What about you, Lois? Anything in the Feb issue?
Yes. The MM Meets in the Feb issue was mine, and it was with GBST's CEO, Rob DeDominicus. And yeah, he was really interesting. He'd come over from Australia to sort of check on the UK side of the business. So I took the opportunity to interview him. So yeah, he spoke to me all about his career all the way from launching an IT startup to running GBST, which was all really interesting. And then what their plans are for the future, which I won't reveal because then people might not read the interview.
Yeah. Read the interview to hear more and look at all the nice pictures too.
Yes. Well done, Neil Gear, who took all the excellent photos.
Yeah. And Mike, finally with you, is there anything that you wanted to point out for the Feb issue?
Yeah, I just wrote about the bust up between the CII and the PFS and kind of what's at stake. And I have to give a shout out to Fiona Tate, who is a pensions veteran who I based a lot of this piece on, because she wrote a really good kind of summary of like both sides for us. And she just kind of made the point, which then I sort of repeated, that there's just a lot of at stake for the profession from the fallout.
And it
would be in everyone's interest if they managed to kind of resolve it. But it's just a question of whether so much if the relationship has become so strained, if that's possible. You know, so we remain to see that. But it's a pretty big thing, I think, that's going on, and we don't know yet what the exact conclusion of it will be.
I guess sometimes in these things, sometimes you forget that there's actual people that are affected by this. As much as you're like, oh, look at this debacle that's going on, there's actual people who are wondering what's going to happen to
their
professional body.
I think one point which is worth maybe pointing out is, I didn't realise this, is that I can't remember who resigned from the PFS, but that's like a voluntary position. It's not paid, so they obviously have their job, and then they're doing it in their spare time. You have these like sort of maybe fancy titles like PFS president or PFS chief executive, but a lot of it relies on the goodwill of, you know, people. So that, I think, is a point which was just interesting, because it's a financial advice body. We probably, and financial advisors are well paid, you tend to assume that it would be I don't know if it was Vanessa Barnes who made
I think it was Caroline Stewart who resigned as
the
president of the PFS, and she was just saying that
it
had taken a toll on her, like emotionally and mentally.
Yeah,
everything that is currently happening, which kind of like, it's quite interesting because it kind of coincides with, you know, like the Prime Minister from New Zealand. She also resigned because she was like, I would like to step down because this is a lot. This is quite an intense job. I don't have enough in the tank. Yeah. And I kind of applaud people who are able to do that rather than just like running themselves into the ground because they think it's the right thing to do. But that's a different point.
I find it very amusing that every single prime minister ages about 10 years faster than if they hadn't been prime minister.
I kind of have the 8-year rule. Like, I think the Americans have got it right, where you serve 2 terms, 8 years. And I think 8 years is enough for any kind of prime minister, president, or say head of Man United, or a big chief executive. And I think after that, you perhaps tend to get a bit bunker mentality.
Jaded.
Jay did, or kind of how it goes to your head. I think 8 years is enough.
I don't know. Maybe the millennial in me is showing too much. I think 8 years is way too long. I feel like you're way too out of the loop for 8 years. That's a long time just kind of being in that bubble.
Yeah.
So maybe 4 years, you still kind of have some idea of the people at the bottom. I don't know. That's just what I think.
Don't you think Obama could have kept going, though? I feel like it wasn't enough.
Oh, he could have, but
I don't know.
Did he want to?
The way Michelle's talking about it, I don't think she would have stayed. She would have stayed. I don't think it's great for their families. Luckily, he left just as his kids were going to uni, so they could be free, kind of free. But
yeah, fair point.
I think you have to also think about your personal life when it comes to being in those positions.
Yeah.
JB, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I kind of lost track. How come you're talking about this?
Well, because we were talking about the PFS president resigning, and then I was saying how it was interesting because it coincided around the same time that the prime minister in New Zealand also stepped down because she didn't have enough in the tank. She couldn't keep going. And I just thought I think it's admirable to be able to say, to admit that I can't do this job anymore, to look after yourself. And that's a message that should be said more often.
Definitely.
So is there anything else you guys wanted to add before we wrap up? No? All you want to say is read the magazine?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. But have to sell this product, you know.
Huh?
That's a product we have to sell, you know.
Yeah, definitely. So make sure you subscribe, get on the website, and make sure that you have it delivered, because again, it is very beautiful. Like, the physical copy is really great, but you can also see the digital copy on the website as well.
And the front cover for the latest one is really cool.
Thank you guys for joining me again, and I'm really looking forward to 2023. It should be a great year.
Definitely. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.